David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 387. I'm your host, Steve Raker, here in the comic book bunker, not quite yet cosmically aware, but someday. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. Our scope is all things Marvel, with a personal bias at least for the Bronze Age, although you wouldn't know it with this episode. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on MarvelNoise.com. There's that handy little calendar-style drop-down menu on the right-hand side for you to easily navigate past months and years. You can get new episode announcements, give us feedback, and see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages. And check out other code-approved podcasts from our own Avenger Prime, Derek Coward, and his Deliberate Noise Network. Especially Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show, now celebrating 500 episodes. This episode's feature is a new installment of our deep dive into the New Warriors title in the 1990s. This one is WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbits, baby. I'm just along for the ride. First, though, it's been a custom on this show since its inception for the host to offer up a recent read or recommendation, so I'm going to give you the lowdown on the new throwback six-issue limited series, Silver Surfer Rebirth. Full disclosure, writer Ron Mars is a very good friend who lives local to me, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen, so I'll still tell you if it's trash. But honestly, how could it be? Because this series reunites Ron with one of the Silver Surfer's pencilers supreme, Ron Lim. Ed and Don Ho's slick finishes, and this book is both a visual and a sequential storytelling treat. Cosmic style. The first issue opens with a sequence involving Genus Vell, son of Captain Marvel, going by the name Legacy. But it's not the cosmically aware Peter David crisscross evolved version. No, it's the original version as Ron created him in that Cosmic Powers limited series, I think. Or maybe that was just his first standalone tale, I forget. But the first time you see the Surfer and all that Ron Glim glory, quite frankly, it's meaningful. Especially with how screwed up the character's been since Abnett Lanning's misuse of him in that first Annihilation War, and all the bumps in the road since. The story here in this Silver Surfer Rebirth title relatively quickly pairs the Surfer with Thanos, the Mad Titan. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again now, nobody else but Ron Mars gets Thanos's character and voice as per Starlin, his creator. It's really fantastic and immediately noticeable. And pair that with Lim's clean lines, this book is really terrific. There are other 90s Marvel cosmic characters too, I just don't really want to spoil it, but this book gets my highest recommendation. It's nostalgic, solid storytelling with beautiful art, satisfying characterizations. Go get this thing. All right, let me get out of the captain's chair and turn things over to Andrew for some New Warriors. Later.
Welcome back, listeners, to the, I can't believe we made it this far, but the 16th episode of our exclusive deep dive into the New Warriors. For those of you that have missed any of the prior 15 segments, let me give you a brief remit. It's I, Andrew the Alley Rabbit, who has not read most of these issues before, New Warriors expert, WWX Kev. Say hi, Kev.
Well, I did have a website, briefly.
And Super Steve in the bunker, who claims to have only read the good issues. So these will all be new issues for him.
No, we are finally to the quote-unquote good issues, as would Derek Robertson on the art chores and the march towards issue 50, there was nothing to stop me from wanting to pick up the next ish over this, the course of these and subsequent and prior issues.
I was going to say, except the crossover?
Yeah, but I was reading X-Force at the time, so I was already going to, you know, and even though it had Capullo stopped drawing it and they were on to Tony Daniel, and it's like, all right, we're definitely getting further along the line of the evolution of the X-Force title. I was still reading that, so here we go.
It's so weird that I was also reading the X-Force title, and I didn't even realize who the artists were, but now I look back and I'm like, whoa, those were those artists.
I mean, those designs, as soon as you saw the Moonstar with the cookie face dressing and stuff, was that a total Tony Daniel design or what?
Well, we're getting pretty deep into the run now, folks. We're in comic book real world, it would be the beginning of 1994. Everything is coming up roses, comic books. Comics are so hot, Steve, they're never going to stop being hot.
This is post-death of Superman, so I think the bloom is off.
There's no limit to the growth of the comic book, so Marvel is putting out more titles than you can imagine, including this fine New Warriors segment. We're going to jump in with 43. We just picked off the team, has been through a lot, but they're kind of coming back together again after some contentious inner team squabbles. I feel like the squabbles will continue, but we're really seeing them push together. Contemporaneously being published is the Night Thrasher series, which we aren't really covering, and the Nova series, which we aren't covering, both those at least now. Who knows about the future? I feel like this is standalone books. On the plus side, most of us are reading these in floppies because the Unlimited has not gotten to uploading a lot of these. But good news, well, maybe good news, you decide. The second two issues of our planned read today, between 43 to 46, i.e. 45 and 46, are part of a four-issue little mini-crossover with the X-Force title, The Child's Play. And all four of those issues are on the Unlimited. I only have the X-Force on the Unlimited. But like I said, going with floppies for the other ones. Boys, I will have questions. Long-time listeners know the 90s was kind of when I tapped out, and I feel like when I go back to the mutants of the 90s, it's hard for me to figure out sometimes what's going on.
Yeah. you remember the old Hellions from the Massachusetts Academy that Emma Frost ran, and they were like the mirror image of the New Mutants that Professor Xavier was doing at his university academy there. So that's the tie, that there's some of those characters on each of these teams, and that ends up being what brings them together for that crossover. Hey, and you know why the team is getting back together after sort of going off and having some kind of solo issues, that not comic issues, but issues that they were dealing with, is issue 50 is coming, like I was saying before. So we got to get the team back together so they can do it proper. And it's funny, I had recalled about this issue and looked, and sure enough, we said this was from the beginning of 94, but is it January or February? It's January on the cover, but if you look at the indicia, it's the February issue.
You can't have that much greatness in just 1 month, Steve. Although, I did have a question. Do you guys know when Moonstar had all that plastic surgery? Because I remember her being drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz in the 80s, and man, her body changed a lot in a few short years. I'll be honest, I did not believe it was the same character. I'm like, oh, this has got to be some body swap thing, right?
Well, that's like the Jim Lee effect, right? When he's drawing Slim Cyclops, or he's drawing Rogue, and I'm like, did she get plastic surgery?
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't
look at this. Look at this cover. Even, I mean, Vance Astro. I mean, Or is it Mach 5?
what?
Making an appearance here. This armored, jacked up, filling the whole cover. We haven't seen Vance Astro look like that.
All right, let's get us into 43. Good point. I'm putting the cart before the horse. We have our mostly regular team of Fabian and Derek Robertson with a rotating cast of anchors. Normally, Malstead, but on this particular issue, Brandon McKinney helps out with the pencils. But it is that Robertson-Malstead team that's on most of these, but you know, there's annuals and double size issues and stuff, and I'm not going to knock anyone who needs a little help finishing the issue. Oh, also, lots of long hair on the men. If you like ponytails and mullets, you're in fashion. And we open up with good old Justice, a.k.a. Shame on me, folks. I forgot to turn the mic over to Kevin to tell us who are our new warriors.
I was waiting. It's the time period with the long hair. So we have Speedball, Bobby Baldwin. He's the guy with the bouncing balls and all that type of stuff. Namorita, who's missing? Who's an Atlantean? Who's a clone? Bad time to say the word clone? Firestar, Angel are, I guess, not resident mutants. I mean, there's Marvel Boy, but she uses the radiation. Nova, with his bucket head flying around. He's Richard. Silhouette, who has a fancy new costume here. I don't know if it's any better than... Marvel Boy's new costume, though. Some of these costumes aren't the greatest. Rage, who's our strong guy. The big guy. Night Thrasher, Dwayne. I don't think he's using his skateboard as much anymore, though. And then Marvel Boy, who's looking for a little justice. He has some of those TK powers.
Well, how can this comic be radical without more skateboard action, Kevin?
I know. I guess maybe they're trying to phase out the skateboard a little bit. You know, emphasize more of the bulky, weird armor and the spikes coming out of his gauntlets there and everything.
And downplay in the night, and he's just going by Thrash.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we open up. Vance had been to prison. Exceedingly short amount of prison time for using his superpowers to kill his abusive father. See prior episodes. I don't want to get into it. So, but it does have early on kind of a nice shot of the team. He's still in his suit being released, but it gives you a real, for once I had a real feeling of Rage's proportions. Like I feel like a lot of times it gets lost, but he really is like a full, you know, head and a half taller than even Nova or any of the other bigger characters. I just thought it was nice. I don't really care for his weird spiky armor.
Big old Jason Voorhees. And they, I was
like
gonna...
the amount of time though from like he's been in jail and we've seen him in jail, but Marvel Boy, or should I call him Justice now? That's been a long term plan. Like titles have come and gone. Well, they've had this whole thing, like, who knew if he was going to come back?
And I was going to, you know, make a smoochy kiss sound for the big splash page that depicts the reunion of Firestar and Justice here, but it's not the kind of kiss that makes a smoochy sound. They really miss each other. I also like in that big splash page, double splash that follows with the group shot, the guardsman in the background. Always like the old guardsman.
Yeah, and then it opens with the release, but then there's protests. Like every time in the Marvel Universe, there's anti-mutant factions who are protesting. I feel like this might be an issue that I would suggest people just enjoy the artwork. I feel that Fabian has Justice go on this long diatribe that did nothing for me. Maybe I'm stone-hearted, Steve. Kevin, maybe I have no soul. But I was fairly unmoved by this multi-page monologue.
You might hate the muties. Is that what you're saying? You're down with the Friends of Humanity?
I think I just don't like this sort of... I didn't find the dialogue. It just seemed like some weird, not persuasive speechifying.
I really was expecting and was disappointed that the last panel in the sequence wasn't him just walking calmly and the outburst was like what he wished he had done. You know what I mean? Like that, yeah. That would have worked for me. But that he actually starts flipping people around and looking like a, you know, Dark Phoenix flying around and hovering over everybody like a witch, not a good look.
They're also playing for, get that? They're also, I'm wasting the jokes for Child's Play already. But they're also playing for a future story here.
Yes, I just felt that maybe less dialogue would have worked to the point better. Like this kind of belaboring his issue. Like, I don't know, maybe this is the first comic you've read discussing the Marvel Comics treatment of mutants and their vision of an integrated society. Maybe it works, but I don't know. I thought it was just not as smoothly handled.
I saw it as upplaying the mutant connection because they need to, because of who the adversaries are going to be. You know, right after that, they introduce Shinobi Shaw to these pages, who we've only seen in the X-books. And then, you know, in a couple of issues, we're going to be tying into the X-Force crossover. So I kind of felt like it was, let's examine the, you know, connection that this team has to the mutant world.
Greg, this is definitely the prequel. As you say, Shinobi Shaw intimates he's part of this contest and he's going to recruit Vance. Vance has a blow up at his mother and he's mad that she didn't do more to prevent the abuse. I'm going to kind of deal with the Namorita Chimera stuff at the end, just
sure.
to because right. this is more of a. I've decided sometimes we flip back and forth, and sometimes it's just simpler to do the one storyline.
Agreed,
and cover the other one. So in this,
you
instance,
know, I thought was funny in this issue though. Something you wouldn't see nowadays is they moved the triangle, like page numbering when they have to.
Mm.
It's like, oh, that we got the panel's going to be there. And I'm like, you don't need to worry about things like that. Like, it gets all fancy just with the numbering.
Just scooch it over a little bit.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we got to move that over.
So it was a nice juxtaposition because Firestar is working with her dad rehabbing from the gang hit. Mm-hmm. And they're more accepting. And then, obviously, poor Vance's mom is not accepting. So when she leaves, she's being protested by all these anti-mutant sentiment groups who are going to, like, they firebomb her house, which always seems like... I do like that we're still in the compressed era, so things are going to escalate quickly.
Well, this was the beginning of the internet time, and, you know, one of the first things people were... Yeah, 94-ish, and thinking, you know, one of the first things that was probably on the internet was how to make a Molotov cocktail. It is a pretty egregious going from, you know, protesting that she's the mother of a mutant to blowing up her house.
So people weren't on the ARPANET and everything looking that stuff, or that stuff didn't exist back
on
then.
On the Vax machine, their Vax accounts.
The Vax terminals. Oh wow! I like how Shaw is here, Shinobi, in his car, and he's just like, yes, yes.
Yeah, so his scheme is to recruit Justice. And I do appreciate the classic nod that when a character is introduced, their font in the word balloon does it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the white and blue with the cape. I'm fine with it. The knee pads are what really kind of, I feel like, don't make it a superhero outfit. Like, Knee pads and elbow pads, I always feel like look like sporting equipment more than superhero equipment.
Yeah, but
gentlemen, feel free to disagree. About
it. I mean, I think his original design is simpler, but it also, I don't know, it just looks better.
The problem is that Vance Astro has a badass costume. He just wears it in the 25th century or whatever, you know, and that character had been around for decades already, so you're stuck with this.
And he also went with the goofy kind of ski visor thing that Firestar uses. I mean, a different color, but that weird
ruby quartz
plastic thing that, I don't know.
How about the red utility belt?
Didn't do it. But anyway, so they're there to break up the fight. And then, of course, the powerless puny humans turn on him, which seems like a dumb idea. But the rest of the new warriors show up and we get to see Rage raging against the machine.
Thank goodness. Somebody has to.
And this is where, again, continuing sort of from the beginning, Vance is raging against the group as well. And that's when Shinobi can make his play that, you know, he's part of the mutant group. Like, what do these puny humans do but give you grief? Come join my squad.
Do sophisticated things like play games.
I also like in the panel that shows Rage breaking the protester's baseball bat in his hand. It depicts Thrash doing his part to disperse the crowd, and he's got his blade out. <It's> like, not fooling around.
Can't show these humans any mercy, Steve.
No, these protesters. I mean, there's an old guy with glasses there and a leisure suit behind him. Get the blade out.
So at this point, we don't know for sure. I did not see that this was an inside plant job by Vance. It seemed rather quick, a quick turn. But I guess that we're going to find out it's a plant. But gentlemen, were you suspicious of how quickly Vance joined up with Shinobi?
No, because I'd seen Colossus join up with Magneto.
That was
so I was
so
like
bad.
No, and like Sabretooth is like, oh, I'm gonna make a run of being a good guy. So I don't know, it was something in the air. It was something that happened.
Well, and then the other major plot line involves picking up where Namorita left off. Last we saw, she was in some kind of weird coma tank down in the Atlantean cities. And we had been spoiled that she turns blue from the promo pieces. So here we see her break out as blue, but with webbed fingers and flying away. We don't get a very good close-up of her. I mean, we see the blue and the webbed fingers, but she breaks out of custody. You know, it's kind of, we don't know. Like, did she go crazy? Is she some sort of going to be a problem now? What's going on? She has a complicated history because she's a clone. They don't like her and down there. But it ends with Namor being consulted that, like, hey, you know, you got to go handle this, because she said, bring me my cousin, bring me the Submariner. The Submariner's like, oh, you like this ponytail, don't you? It's real long.
This is the Submariner from the John Byrne book. But after Byrne was off the book and it was Jay Lee doing the art chores, and it's got the big armband, golden armbands with the, like, Azrael razor blades coming off of him. And he does look pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
Stoic.
And then this cover for 44, I remember this being a feature, and they went into, like, the multiple-hour process of, like, you have to put the makeup on that on the actress, on the model. I guess the model,
right?
It's
Martrice Beck is the model, and I have it written down who the photographer was. Paul Meese.
Yeah, they have a thing in the back of the comic where they talk about the credits.
Oh, there we go
for the thing. But a couple of last comments on 43 before we jump out. I feel like things are going to get a little sloppy with Marvel. Kind of reminds me of the 70s a little bit. Like, we see Like, the letter column in 43 is printed sideways for some unknown reason. Like, it's not like an image that you need to do that. And the bullpen bulletins is just about all of them shilling on QVC. Those of you that don't remember, that was a home shot. It seems like we're headed maybe in less of a regular comic book and more of like a, how much crap can Marvel bump out?
Yeah, this is a lot of editors involved on the, you know, in the bullpen at this time, handling all these different books and stuff. You know, I'm pretty well versed in Marvel staff, and I've never heard of this editor or this assistant editor that I can recall.
Yeah, the shill is falling. But anyways, yeah, 44 is a photo cover, which I'm sure is kind of cool because there looks to be light effects on it. And they had had photo covers, but usually they're more collage-y types. And this is, as you say, Marjorie Beck, photographed by Paul Mezzi, print by KDU. And in the back of the issue, they have a whole little one page describing how they did it. I actually, for some reason, have two copies of this issue if someone wants a beat-up reader copy. Try and contact me, and if I can get it to you, I will, for the low price of zero, even though it's a $1.25 cover.
Yeah, I'm looking at my copy, and I'm like, this is not a near-mint copy. And I'm just like, why? Just like I was looking at the bag that 43 is in, and it's like ripped, and it has like old tape, and I'm like, why? These bags are embarrassing.
Poor Kevin. But anyways, it's like a... she's tinted blue and it's dark with the pointed ears and the white teeth, and it's the new Namorita, who we're going to be introduced to shortly because, you know, Namor and his squad are heading it. And in this case, we're back down to one penciler. So we don't have to go with, and it's the Robertson-Malstadt combo again. I also feel like sometimes, and this might be something with Fabian, because Eliopoulos is a great letterer, but there are so many like data dump exposition-y sections that I feel like it's a lot of work on him getting all these balloons in, because it's like her whole history of being the clone and how she can't get in and what he happened to her and all that. And I guess it's, I don't know, I guess I'd rather have it just dumped over a page than spread out over four or five, but I don't know. It always stands out to me. Gentlemen, did you have any? Am I being overly sensitive?
I'm never getting these issues, so I mean, I need to know this history.
It made me want to go back and read the Submariner issues that I haven't read. It's a great series.
Yeah, some beautiful artwork, by the way, too.
Oh, I know.
I mean, like I said, if the story, sometimes when I tune out the story, I'm never regretting going through and checking out what's going on. So over the course of, we get this story over the course of four or five ones. And this one, I guess do we want to tell each storyline or go page by page, boys?
Whatever
you guys
you
get
want.
To decide.
I have to tell you first that there's an ad in here and it says, this couldn't wait till the 21st century. And it's Mega Man X.
Could it have waited, Kevin?
No. I had to tell you about it right now.
Well, my wife noticed the back ad for the pimple cream. It's the era of like video games, pimple cream, and trading cards, folks, if you're interested in what the ads of 94 mostly contained in it.
I'll tell you though, for an issue that has a photo cover and not an art cover, the art is really, like, Robertson is really hitting his stride here.
Yes. But
Namor's hands on the first page reaching onto the rubble, his crouched body like squatting, fitting through the hole going into the cave, and he's got a mat on the second page is a mean looking, really good looking Namor. And the page with the exposition dump is really laid out nicely as a page, even though it's obscured by all the word balloons. But the Namora and the Namorita are both really nicely drawn, and is the visor Vashti or somebody like that? He looks great with his flowing beard and the purple highlights and stuff. The next page with Namorita jumping out of the water,
yes,
with her arms spread and the dolphins. I mean, this is, the anatomy is spot on, and the poses took some thought. They really, yeah. Even though they're obviously static, they really depict motion really nicely.
I feel the art has been the selling point. Whenever I'm tuning out, I can just enjoy the pictorial of it. Even though, like I said, I would not, that like 4-foot-long ponytail Namor has does nothing for me.
Yep.
But he's going to track her down and gets caught up in some nets that she had freed some dolphins with. And in that image that you described, the dolphins are playing in the background. It's such a great time. And we get a full page spread of Namorita, who's now going to be Chimera. But again, it's this 90s, so it's the asymmetrical, like, one shoulder pad, one knee pad, random nets and everything. That must be a nightmare to remember. Okay, so she has a net on her left arm, but her right hip, and like, just, I don't know. It's a beautiful drawing, but that kind of mismatch outfit thing never really works for me usually.
It
and how does that seashell, like, that's going to stay on?
There's a crab inside grabbing.
I don't know. It's strange.
And for all I just praised Robertson for his anatomy, this one is so wonky that, and I know they're going for like the mermaid with the long flowing, like, you know, almost like Nova's flight trail behind him kind of a thing, and showing the grace of the underwater movement. But, you know, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way told me that bodies were 6 heads tall, and this one's like 9.
And 7 of those heads should be legs, right?
Yeah, I mean, between her knee and her foot, it's like 3 heads long. It's
I love that they gave her ankle wings, can I say?
Yeah.
Fully on board with the return of the ankle wings.
Absolutely.
So now she has the ankle wings, she's got the web fingers, we talked about blonde hair, completely blue, black eyes, and she is a woman without a home. Doesn't fit in Atlantis, doesn't fit on the surface world anymore. You know those surface worlders, guys. They're no good.
Those air breathers.
Except so she looks pretty happy. Yeah. She likes being green. Maybe it could work for Namorita.
So she has a tearful back and forth with Namor. No fighting, just that whole, again, woman without a world, what am I going to do? And he said, hey, look, man, your friends, they'll stick by you. They're not a bunch of creepos. She's like, really? So she goes, and we had already seen a possible budding romance with Kid Nova, Rich Rider.
I'll tell you,
he still goes by Kid Nova, right, Steve?
Yeah. For this 4-page conversation, it's, again, laid out so nicely and dynamically. You get some real nice shots of both characters.
Yeah, and so Rich is crashing at the New Warriors headquarters, so they're able to have a nice moment when she reintroduces herself, and he's like, what's happened? And she's clearly nervous about how it's going to go, and in a almost completely wordless page, he obviously accepts her, which that's like, you don't need a ton of dialogue. You can just tell the story through 5 or 6 panels there.
Yeah, she's still hot. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the web fingers thing might be the part.
Yeah, no, that's problematic.
But that's 90% of the issue. The other bit of it is just pushing forward what's happening to the main crew. And the main crew are sussed out in New Warriors headquarters. Kevin, what do you call that? Do you have a name for their headquarters that's very catchy?
The crash pad? I laughed when you said he's crashing there. I'm like, well, it is the crash pad.
So, you know, Jessica, a.k.a., you know, Vance's girlfriend, is pretty upset that he just bailed out. And this is where skateboard boy coyly smiles that maybe it wasn't a surprise that he went, dun, 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 to the other side.
What?
I did not see that going. Boys, this is all an inside con job.
Oh, and you know who the upstarts are, right?
Yes.
No.
They were introduced in when Uncanny first started having Byrne and Wils Portacio doing it because of the Claremont Lee starting the first adjectiveless X-Men book, when it went like the gold and the blue teams. in that very first issue, they introduced that Fitzroy guy and the other members of this bunch of wannabes that are trying to vie for the vacuum left by the dissolution of the Hellfire Club.
Yeah, I was pretty into some of those characters.
Well, you guys will have to school me, because I'm going to need a lot of help, because as the book helpfully ends, you know, well, again, it's more of the Dwayne Vance, like, ah, we're working on the inside. The editors direct us to X-Force 33, which is the wrong issue. Again, I feel like these kind of same dude writing both of them, and he didn't go and say that actually it starts in X-Force 32, not in X-Force 33.
Oh, you know, I thought it was February, not January. Oops. I don't know how I got that in my head.
And like, there aren't, look, I get their goofs all the time, but I feel like we're seeing a sort of, like I said, the more systemic goofs that remind me of the 70s or whatever, when just people were doing whatever and no one was watching the store.
Well, that's because there's too many titles to watch now.
But this brings me now over to The Unlimited, to, like I said, X-Force number 32. Now, playing at home, start a game. How many times is Andy going to call X-Force X-Factor? I have the over-under on 10, because I keep wanting to call this X-Factor, but it's X-Force, a book I was vaguely familiar with, but far and away, by this point, I was off of it. I do like that they give the roll call on the inside. Fabian again is here, but as you guys say, it's Tony Daniel. John Holeridge is the inker on this first issue, where we're going to find out that the game that's afoot involves capturing, as you said, former New Mutants or Hellions. I think that, I don't know, I don't know if this made it to air or not, but the 90s, when I was out of comics, the mutant stuff is the stuff I have the most problem sort of figuring out what's going on. So I'm going to lean on you guys a little bit. We're not going to go too, we're going to kind of cover these briefly, but I'm relying on Kevin and Steve as expert mutant 90s people.
Well, I read these during the 90s, but I don't know how much I remember, but I read almost the entire run of X-Force.
So Fenris.
Yeah, these guys, those I remember. I do not remember them looking like this. I always liked these Andreas and his sister and all that were a fun mutant pair of villains, Andrea and Andreas Strucker. And their mutant power involves when they touch each other, they get juiced up. And fans of our Thunderbolts coverage know what happened, how that story worked out. Rather grimly. But here they're just so 90s, with all the women are drawn with that crazy 90s proportions.
Yep.
Which is just bizarre. As I said, I didn't even recognize Moon's. Like, these characters all look the same, the women. Like, you just change the hair and the outfit, and there's no difference from one to the next. Like, but anyways, it starts with they're trying to get into the club. So they're out to capture some mutants. And we're going to find out that, you know, whoever captures the most wins. It's like Pokemon.
You got to catch them all.
And Fenris, the two of them, they want in on this group, the upstarts. So this is like their resume to try to get in, is to do good in this contest. And everything's being led by the game's master, who is this very, very powerful mind, almost like he's like quasi, like computery.
He's like plugged into a psychic network that's like the internet, kind of, but it's all our kind of subconsciousness. Yeah, and they describe it like a prison and like his source of his power.
Yeah, it's not a contest of champions. It's kind of a... Well, you have the cyberspace type of thing, but this isn't cyberspace. This is the other type of, like, mindscape space thing that they sometimes do, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, so the Fenris captures their group, and then we cut to Cannonball and Boom Boom. And coming from the 80s, Cannonball was like a geeky kid, and then they turned him into the dude that dated every mutant woman in the world.
Yep.
I guess he became more of a player in the subsequent years.
Didn't the Strucker twins have to touch skin-to-skin contact? That threw me off when they were able to just touch their gloves.
No, they touch. It's just one touch, then brother, to activate our all mutant powers.
Mm-hmm. Steve, it's like those gloves that let you use your computer. They're those type of gloves. You know, they have the contacts that let you work through your...
I thought that was the thing of the Thunderbolts, that when he was the swordsman there, that he had to have the gauntlet, the handle of his sword was her flesh so that he could touch it with his bare hand. No?
See, they got confused with Aurora and Northstar. You know, I always remember being intrigued by this great game, and I always thought, oh, it's going to go somewhere, but I don't know if it really ever does. Not that it needed to, because it's just like, oh, we're going to all get points. But ultimately, like, it's the 90s, it's like meaningless.
Oh, wait for my wrap-up. I'm going to lay into this.
So, and upstarts are that Fitzroy guy from the future with the green hair. And who Bishop was chasing when he first was introduced into the Marvel Universe in that 281 or 2, whatever, of Uncanny. And there's this Shinobi Shaw. He's one of them. There's this Sienna Red? Or Sierra Red?
Sienna Blaze.
Sienna Blaze. Like,
she's a human Crayola crayon come to life.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure those 124 packs always had a Sienna Blaze crayon.
I thought she was one of Jim Lee's Wildcats, actually, but
oh no.
And then who's the other one? It's the son of
Braden Creed.
Yeah, the son of Mystique and Sabretooth.
Basically a bunch of unknown jabronis that you can trade in and out, and no one really cares about.
Son of
the thing I like about Shinobi is he always reminds everyone all the time how he killed his father, so he got a lot of points.
Yeah, and as Kevin jokingly said, this is like basically all those ones where you gotta capture whoever captures the most, and they're gonna kill them eventually, but they're not killing them at the front end, except for his dad, which the Games Master doesn't think gets you that many points, but. And as I said, Cannonball and Boom Boom get caught by Sienna Blaze, who's some kind of super powerful mutant who I had never heard of before. But we're going to see she's able to. And at this point, we learn that Sam's youngest sister has the mutant power to be impossibly skinny, and some other mutant power as well.
She's young and skinny.
But she wasn't able to utilize that power to save Sam and Boom Boom from getting captured.
She can shuck her skin like it's a ear of corn, just like on the farm, just like Mom had her do before dinner.
So because we're going to get a lot of this story in both issues, there's a bit of repetition. I didn't think it was too excessive for a crossover, but I thought as the mechanics of the crossover worked, it worked okay. I think the event's a failure, but I think the apportionment of story to each issue functions fine because we have the same writer, probably helped a lot. But Danny Moonstar had something awful happen to her, but she's able to waylay the Fenris twins temporarily with her bolts. She has the arrow now that neuropsychically paralyzes you, as opposed to the nightmares coming to life thing.
Yep. Her face was all messed up. That's why she keeps it covered.
The part I enjoyed the most, I think, out of this first issue was the Cable storyline, because he's tagging that Fitzroy, and he ends up coming up, not in this issue, but eventually, with a clever way that does in the Fitzroy character, which I'm sure you guys were sad to see that guy go.
Oh, of course. I always like Cable going body slide by one or whatever.
Yeah, that part was good. But for my taste, when we get to part two, which is the New Warriors, the art is much more to my liking when we're back. Maybe it's just because we've been reading these for a lot of issues, but I see less of those 90s excesses. Not that, you know, everybody still looks super and curvy and muscular and all that, but it's less of the weird leg, hoof, foot nonsense.
Yep. The ex-office.
McKinney... Oh, yeah. Sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
The ex-office was very editorially driven, so there was a house look for sure. Unfortunately, they gave that guy the editor-in-chief job after Tom DeFalco, so...
And again, McKinney jumps in to help our regular team on this book, and a few extra anchors jump in, too. So it's all hands on deck. I didn't notice any big drop. I mean, you can go panel to panel and see things, but it still worked for me, even with the the additional hands on deck. Gentlemen, any complaints? Sure. Any
no.
drop-offs or any problems? Okay.
No, I should really go back and read this someday.
Yeah, I never want to be like, hey, when I make a conclusion, I always invite everyone, the listener as well, to disagree. Maybe you're like, oh my God, those other hacks ruined.
This title, if I wasn't clear, because it's been a long time.
I know, Kevin. We were hoping you were reading the New Warriors as we were going, but hey, I get it, you know.
Because I know the artists and stuff now, and then I can like point out things like, oh yeah, there was this. There's a lot of weird plots. I'm like, oh yeah, this is where they dropped that thing, or this never went anywhere, or whatever happened to that. Like, there's certain characters like were mysterious, and I was intrigued by back then, and now I'd probably be like, I don't get what's going on anymore.
I'd like to reread those.
Like that. Like, you try to discover what was so exciting to you back then about certain people.
I wouldn't mind revisiting those Greg Capullo, Harry Candelario drawn issues that happened after Liefeld left the book. They basically took the Quasar art team and put it on X-Force, and it was pretty good.
And then you're like, oh, who's Tolliver? What's with the mysterious Tolliver guy?
Capullo did a good Cable.
So for 45 New Warriors, it, like I said, a nice bit of resetting. I think you might be able to get by without the X-Force issues. The avatar of the Games Master is explaining the situation to the now kidnapped Cannonball and Magma and all those characters. So that way he can reset who the bad guys are, what's going on. And just to juxtaposition, they show footage of... like in the old school look of the New Mutants and the Hellions, and they don't all look the same. Like, they're not even, not that I'd say that's the greatest collection ever, but at least it's different than those X-Force issues where I feel like the characters look too much the same. Here they're, you know, different heights, different proportions and all that stuff, which I liked.
I like how the Game Master works in the name of this story too. It'll be like child's play.
Well, he's got...
there we go.
They're selling the bit. I mean, my favorite part is Nova is just about to lay into a giant Subway sandwich. So they're going over the debrief to get everyone up to speed. And at this point, there's a quick digression where we get to see Silhouette's full new outfit with her not wearing the cloak and all that stuff. And it's a nice... blue and black number fitting with her power. She can fade in and out and travel through shadows.
Yeah.
And then her braces are all like a shiny metallic, which maybe doesn't fit, but whatever. Like, it looks cool, which I guess is more important than stylistic choice. Any comments on Silhouette's outfit, gentlemen?
It's fine. It looks more techy, but still not super excited by
it's
I don't think it's an improvement over the original.
It's making Speedball angry is what it's doing.
Yeah. Well, in one of these pages where Nova's with his giant Subway, the coloring looks, I don't know if it's faded out to you or something, like The reds aren't possible.
Yeah, they're in mine. They're all orange too.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a printing issue or what, but I think it's weird that all the men have so much hair, but Silhouette's head is completely encased in a skull cap, so they don't. But as Steve said, Speedball gets so mad, his outfit subtly changes to where he has black gloves and boots. And
it's like he clenches up his butt cheeks really tight, and then pop, like his outfit changes. It's like,
and he becomes Penance?
Yeah.
And if he hadn't drawn attention, I'm not sure I would notice that. Like I said, the black gloves and boots and the chest design is a little different, but it is a pretty, compared to the other changes, I feel it's a fairly subtle adjustment.
Yeah. Needs more black. So they added it.
Spoiler alert, as we know, Firestar was a former Hellion, so she's on the table. That's who Vance is supposed to get, but the other players are going to get her. So we have the Tribunal, who was hired. You guys know the Tribunal, right?
Living?
Yeah, exactly. Bunch of unknown, nobody knows what's. And the New Warriors are going to make short work of them. I feel like they're not a much of a challenge, but it's fun. We finally get some action going on here. And we also get commentary. Because he's a telepath, everybody's feints and suggestions and tricks, the Game Master sees through it, but he respects Game. Game recognizes Game.
He's too powerful. He's too much.
Yeah, much too much. But as a result...
It's funny, if he's going to go up against Cable, I mean, there's another guy that's rather a lot.
So after they kick butt, Vance shows up, and then he's like, hey, I got to bring in my girlfriend. She's the one we need to get 1 point, even though everyone else has gotten multiple people. They're going to go for the Sebastian Shaw and the one mutant. It seems like they're not looking to win. But what I really like is that she's like, what if I die doing all this? And he's like, well, that's what justice may demand. I'm like, man, this guy's not getting boyfriend points from me.
And he cleverly is using his moniker there, too. When he says justice may demand, what's he really
saying?
And
then maybe Speedball's off to the side. You have to work justice into like every second sentence.
So what we find out when he brings, he puts her in the telepathic cocoon and delivers her to Shinobi. And that's when we find out, the readers, that Justice and Shinobi are planning to betray the Games Master.
Oh, no.
And Justice is like, hey, isn't this dude a telepath? And then the guy's like, hey, I went to Best Buy and bought... Oh, sorry, it's nice. I went to Circuit City and bought all the crap that stops telepaths. Don't worry about it, man. But obviously, he should get his money back from Circuit. Well, it's too late now, but, it doesn't work.
Professor X trained us all how to ward off. Hey, Andrew, earlier in the issue when Danny Moonstar uses her psychic bow and zaps some dude there in the crowd on the docks. How Ditko-y does that panel made me totally think of Ditko, the guy flipping backwards, seeing the back of his like shoe and the way his arm and clothes, it just had a real Ditko look to me.
Yeah, I enjoyed, like I said, while I don't recognize that character as Danny Moonstone, I do think that panel was cool. As this is setting up the X-Force. This is like the little bit of, so we got some meat for 33 X-Force. You end up with Moonstar is a, she's got those arrows, and you say it's a great, because it's also done neat with the coloring, where it's all like a lot of lines and one color that works out. But Sienna Blaze shows up, but Karma also shows up, and Karma can control people. So it works out that she's going to run the show that way. Because on the end of the issue, it looks like Sienna Blaze has captured Karma, Danny, and Empath, but we know that that doesn't seem likely, because last we saw, Karma had the upper hand. So it's not spelled out, but we can assume that that's like a inside mole planted. Although, again, given how powerful the telepath is, I was already suspicious that that was going to work.
I still want to say Sierra Mist every time I see that woman.
That's fine. It's a ridiculous character concept, idea, everything. But this throws us back over to our X-Force 33. Again, I'm reading these on the Unlimited. And the new Warriors issues, these two are on the Unlimited, too. I think the rest is, as we discussed, we're supposed to maybe do a second omnibus. And if they do, I'm sure they'll upload all those paper ones I talked about. Fingers crossed, anyway. So this, like I said, my favorite part of all this was the Cable tricking the Fitzroy character, and he ends up consuming himself to open up a portal.
Finally.
And John Holdridge is our anchor here, but it's the Tony Daniel Fabian team up as well. I don't know if he, I forgot if he was the anchor on the one before. I apologize. But it's all hands on deck. They're all just beating up on this Fitzroy. And you know, it's the classic. It's your Richter, your Shatterstar, your Siren. Basically like the original 60s X-Men lineup.
I thought you were going to have me do the lineup here for X-Force, but then we never got to it. And also this Bantam, I have no memory of that character.
Yeah, he's part of Fitzroy's crew that sort of, he's a cowardly mutant that explains how they're going to work this gimmick where Cable is using his techno-organic virus. So he's not human flesh, so when Fitzroy goes to use his flesh by touching him, the techno-organic mesh doesn't allow that, so the only thing left to feed on is Fitzroy himself. And like I said, I thought that was like a clever bit, although, again, it's the end of Fitzroy. And
thank goodness.
I know he was on Kevin's 75th favorite villain of the 90s list, so...
Whoa, maybe higher than that. Once you read that Bishop series in the second half of the 90s,
yeah.
I mean, if we ever get there.
Bishop. And so then they're going to go track backwards. So that's how they're going to get to the end boss, to the Games Master, basically. And then our Games Master reveals that he's keeping all the other people hostage. So, he's going to kill him at the end.
For one of your supervillains, too.
But if anyone's going to go after him, you know, they're risking their lives of their friends. The new Warriors go by a different tactic, and that is they decide to blackmail Creed to give him the information about where the Games Master is, given his love of the anti-mutant forces, but his mutant background. Those are two things that aren't going to work together. I thought that happened kind of quickly, gentlemen. I was not satisfied.
Keep the story moving.
That was a persuasive reason. But like I said, then Cable's team is still working backwards. Karma is able to free the crew, you know, from the inside. However, Sienna Blaze is also freed, which doesn't seem fair. But again, like the Games Master, as Steve said, he's too powerful. So it leaves a kind of silly whatever needs to happen gets done out around. And that's going to lead us into the finale. But is there anything you gentlemen... I don't want to cut your gentlemen's comments on X-Force 33 short.
I just wanted to mention this isn't the only time that we've seen like one of the main villains like in a hot tub or something like that. And then they have to go put a robe on. Like,
are you thinking of the Kingpin again? The Kingpin and the Red Skull fighting again in the steam room.
So, like I said, that brings us back over to our final chapter. The New Warriors get the honor of being the last one, where we see our mighty team up. And it opens up with the two teams both reaching the Games Master's headquarters. And Robertson is alone on penciling, but again, it's a team of anchors, Malstead, Bellinati, and Aiken. All hands on deck. We got to get this crossover. Like, they got little panels of each team's, and it's nice because Cable's like, hey, this guy's a telepath. We got no hope of sneaking up on him, so let's go full crush, crumble, stomp, and splits up the squad, mixing the squads, which is kind of fun. I always like that. You know, you got to team up. You don't want to see, like, oh, keep the New Warriors together and the X-Force together. No. I want to see them mix and match the teams, right?
Yep. Yep, one member of the JLA with one member of the JSA for that annual team up for their little chapter, their little sub chapter. That's what you want to see.
And, you know, a couple jokes about some of the characters. Well, you know, Cable, because he doesn't know the crew. So he's able to make fun of it. Kevin, were you okay with that? Did you like Cable making fun of the New Warriors?
Sure, why not?
But I liked it, because it's a lot of characters, big team up. I think Malsta does a great job with, you know, making all these characters. Because it's a lot. It's two teams worth. I mean, it's not George Perez-esque numbers, but it's a good number of people to have. And speaking of people, there's a really cool shot of showing the Games Master plugged into the worldwide brain web or whatever, where it's his helmet, and on the inside, it's just all these little faces. I really like that.
Yeah, I was looking for me.
Oh, jeez.
Well, Steve, I wasn't born in 94 yet, so right. You wouldn't see me in there.
Like on Romper Room when you were hoping that she said your name.
And it's just a fun... So, you know, we got these squads of like usually four guys, guys being gender non-determinative, by the way, and the Games Master just, you know, messes with them before they can even get there. So they weren't going to get, we knew they weren't. So there's a cool scene where we find out that Sierra Mist is super powerful. And she's going to blast everybody, but Speedball ends up saving them by extending his bouncy, bouncy field. I like that. That was fun. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. Speedball coming in handy. But it wipes him out. You know, it doesn't kill him, but I mean it wipes out his power. So all these groups get infiltrated, and all of them, you know, he's able to take them over and use one of them to attack the rest. I thought that was good, you know, because they weren't going to fight in the beginning of the issue.
Right. They were so happy, right? They're like, they were so proud of themselves. Like, this is going to be the first time two super teams get together and don't fight first. Oh, well, we did fight the first time we got together in the last crossover. Oh, yeah, but not this time. Here we go.
So he ends up beating them all, you know, by taking over the correct people at the correct time. They're all waylaid, except for Sam Guthrie's younger sister Paige, who tagged along. Yeah. I will learn to say all my words at some point.
That's because she did her impersonation of Groot, and they didn't know that she was there.
Strangely enough, her anatomy not that much different than when she's normally. But she's very bummed out by what happened to her brother, and that. In one panel, she appears to be naked, and then her costume gets put back on or something. I don't.
That's her power.
Yeah,
I think she can rip her skin off, isn't it?
I think Games Master hooked her up because the orange glow that's usually around him goes around her when he doesn't want to see that skinny little body naked.
And she's like, "Wait a sec, I'm gonna solve this entire event, all four issues, and I really don't understand what, gentlemen, this is where I need your help. I don't really get the end of this. I think, like so many of these comics, Fabian never has an ending for these things, and he just punts on some weak nonsense. But tell me I'm wrong, Steve.
No,
me on this genius event.
See, by convincing them that the source of the very mutants that they're trying to destroy is the sun, they travel into the sun and destroy themselves. It, you know, it's hokey, but it works.
Hey, at least I understood that logic. She's like, hey, how about you play me? And the rules of the game are, if you win, you get me. And if I lose, you get everybody. And then she's like, yeah, well, how's that fun for me? And she's like, oh, come on, there's lots of new mutants being created all the time. And how are they going to turn out? Who knows? Like, are they going to be good guys or bad guys? What teams are they going to join? And he's like, whoa, Paige, you win. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What did she win? Like, he could still do that and kill all these guys.
Right.
Like, I don't get what she... I read this thing like three times, and it's a couple of pages, and if any listener wants to write their thesis on it...
She's basically saying that, like, even better competition would be to compete with those chess masters who are after the New Mutants, whether it be the Magnetos or the Emma Frosts or the Charles Xaviers or whoever the principal players are at any given time, whether it's Cable recruiting them for X-Force. But there's all these factions vying for mutants, and there's a gajillion mutants out there, so maybe he should get in on that. He's missing a game.
Yeah. I don't get how that involves her, though.
Yeah, right.
Like, no. Can he just do that? How is she going to start recruiting mutant? Like, are they going to tally up who gets more or whatever? That might be me. But nevertheless, everything's wrapped up with a bow, which I do appreciate that they're not going to, you know, four issues was cool. They got some of the X magic rubbed off, or maybe got a new Warriors person to read this or whatever. However this thing worked. Two issues fine. Like I said, I think you could read this standalone.
I did like how there was a quick, like, one panel shot of X-Factor having apprehended Fenris. That, like, yeah. We didn't even need to see that.
No, that's going to be
we saw enough of,
X-Force.
We saw enough Fenris at the beginning of this crossover.
And they look pretty sad in their little handcuffs and energy shackles.
But Strong Guy looks happy, in contrast.
And then it ends with some geeky guy with glasses and hair, who I took to be the games master, but he has a photo of a family on his thing,
That can't be the games master, because that guy's kind of has a broad chin and glasses, and we've seen the games master, including in the X-Force issue 33 there, yeah. And he's kind of like a Lobot looking guy, a bald guy with a kind of a headpiece that comes around to the sides, and he's not as muscular as his avatar was that they fought. This guy, is it Cameron Hodge? Is that who that is? But why would that be in the New Warriors issue and not X-Force? I don't know.
Maybe we'll have to read more 90s X-Men to not find out.
Well, I thought maybe because he's super powerful, he decided he didn't want to look like he used to look. So he went and made some changes to his appearance. Hmm. But the family is the clue that makes me think I'm wrong. Because this guy, it's kind of prominent in the shot, the picture of him with a wife and a kid.
Yeah.
But he does say, like, to you, meaning to Cable, because Cable's in the shop panel before, and to Charlie, I assume Charles Xavier,
right,
and to Dwayne Taylor, and to Forge and Exodus and Mr. Sinister and all of you out there, let the game begin. Makes me think, oh, that's the so maybe
that's
there's going to be some big event with them. But I just was really, and they're fun issues. I like the art, but I really, if you don't have an ending, don't do these things. Man.
And the photo, it has to be him in the photo, right? Because he's got the same color shirt on.
I love the art. I thought some of the story was not to my liking, but gentlemen, I'll let you have your words on these issues.
Yeah, I feel like this is when we read those annuals and it was a little weird, a little confusing,
but at least the art was better.
Yeah, the artwork was a little you know, sometimes it gets a little shaky. But, I mean, I read all these.
And
I think the more exciting thing was the issues before the Child's Play. Even though it's a crossover, it's like those are the issues I, like, distinctly remember. Some of these crossovers, I think they just get kind of lost in your mind there.
Because they finished bringing the team together and getting them each through their costume change.
Hey, I mean, I remember the Namorita thing is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool new look. I mean, I don't like the outfit, but the blue skin and ankle wings and all that are cool.
I mean, I think that's a better redesign than the Silhouette or the Justice.
Yeah, you miss that revenge battle armor, though, don't you, Kevin?
Yeah, that's what it's like.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hopefully we will continue on with this segment if it continues to be popular. I know it's a little bit rough because these aren't all on the Unlimited, but fingers crossed for that omnibus and them to upload. And otherwise, you can find these at discerning comic retailers. I know the issues I bought were not expensive. But again, they're reader copies, so, you know, your mileage may vary.
Later.
Meet the sulky, over-bumpy, kinda hunky superhero.
Hot to twisted and electrically transistored superhero. And exotically neurotic
and aquatic superhero.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived.
Super-powered from the forehead to the toes.
Watch them change their very shape before your nose.
See arcane striking superhero change to Viking superhero.
Ahem, ding and reel, sling and shield, fling and superhero.
They're the latest, they're